Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7. Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school, you're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
We are visiting the ATL today, and it sure does not disappoint. Nene goes to dinner with Sheree and Kim, and of course, it doesn't end well. Let's just say Sheree goes after Kim's wig. Stand-up comedian Tig Notaro joins the podcast for her first episode ever of The Real Housewives. This is The Real Housewives of Atlanta, Season 2, Episode 3, Unbelievable, which I've changed to Unbewiggable. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to meet you. Thank you for doing this. And
thanks for having me.
Of course. Have you ever watched The Housewives?
The first time was when I was sent the link.
Of any show?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just in general, across the board, I don't even watch much TV or film. So this was like an unusual thing where I sat down and like watched something.
Well, I love that when there are certain people that you're just picturing them in their house. Like when, and by the way, I just watched an episode of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, which was an experiment that you can't even imagine. I've never seen it. It was like watching another planet, like people from another planet. It was really crazy. So
that's how I felt.
But I had Jerry Springer on here, which, and when him telling me about his wife walking through the room and saying, what are you watching? Like, what are you doing? Like, are you taking up any new hobbies? It was, so I find it funny when people who haven't, like, what they must be thinking. What was your preconceived notion about The Housewives overall? Like, what is your, what do you think about it when you just hear, like, Housewives from your periphery or from news or pop culture, et cetera?
I guess I think that people are fighting. I guess that's my thought. And then I told my wife that I was doing this, and she was like, oh, well, you know who Bethany is she started the
Skinny Girl Margarita.
Skinny Margarita, which is my drink of choice wherever
Stop!
I go. And I didn't even know where I started drinking that from.
Oh my God. I did invent something and you drink it. How funny is that?
I drink it and I didn't know where it came from. And she was like, listen here, bozo, that's where it came from. She didn't really say that, but yeah.
So that's why you did this. You owe me.
I do. I owe you because I love margaritas, but I was always like, oh, it's too sour and it's too sweet. I wish it wasn't, too much of these two things. And
I love that because there are times in the past when people have stopped me. Wait, that's the skinny girl. Like some people, I just think it's interesting about marketing and branding that there are many people who don't know who I am, but they know who the drink is or know. Yeah. And that's cool from like a business perspective, but that made my day. It's funny. I'll be places in other countries and they'll be like, oh, you mean you want the skinny margarita? And I literally am like, I invented that because I just want that one guy to know.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, haha. And I'm like, no, no, no. I invented that.
Of course. And then my sister-in-law, she follows the housewives shows. And she was when my wife told her sister that I was doing this, her sister was like, well, this might be the thing I'm most excited about from your career.
This is the crowning jewel of your career. Well, you don't have to be embarrassed because the show does very well because people thought initially I was on the show and I'm doing a rewatch, which is kind of just like boring in a way. But with the things we end up talking about in breaking down just this vehicle, you end up talking about like stuff that you and your friends might go through or you and your, you know. So anyway, it becomes this vehicle for this other conversation with any luck. So this is Atlanta and New York. Orange County was first. I was on New York, which was next. I think it was Jersey was next, I think, or Jersey and Atlanta were very close to each other. So this is old school Atlanta. And this is like before everybody had a hair and makeup crew and everybody was wearing head to toe designer Gucci Valentino and everything was logos and labels. And it was like a little messier back then. Like now it's very like Knott's Landing or Dallas where people come in with, you know, giant ball gowns to go to a barbecue. And so back then it was a little more, it was just a little more gritty. And I liked it back then because I like messy, just like people being who they authentically are, for better or for worse. So this is the era that you're in right now, and you walked into this show, and it's a good era. This is the heyday of this show.
Well, and I'm curious, when I was watching this, you know, if there's somebody like me that's doing the show and I've never seen the show, how I can just pop in on season 3, episode 2, and just. Because that's what I was given, I think, was season 3, episode 2. And
right.
I was like, okay.
And when I thought of doing this, I thought to myself, that's random too. Like today I just watched an episode I've never seen talking about people some people may never see. First of all, it gets people to watch some. It also, it's such a rabid fan base. It's like going back and watching like This Is Us or MASH or something. Such a rabid fan base that they know. And if they don't know, they know through pop culture and headlines. And because of the conversation, like I just had a conversation with Jenny McCarthy about this Salt Lake City thing. I think it's entertaining despite knowing everything because of the way we're going to go. Like people know who NeNe is and Kim is in the zeitgeist. So it kind of, you kind of piece it together. It seems to work. So NeNe is to me, this is vintage NeNe. This is old school NeNe. Like she was very funny. She's done stand-up comedy, by the way. And she was very funny because she was authentically her. She got very sort of fancy years after, but this is when she was really like messy NeNe. And she and Kim were very good friends.
Okay.
Okay. So they were very good friends. And now we're walking into a scene where I guess they were there the week before sitting down to have this conversation. And it's Sheree, NeNe, and Kim sitting at this restaurant. Mm-hmm. So Sheree, episodes before this gets, or at some point, I think it's the season, gets into a fight with a party planner. And she literally like stands up and you think she's going to throw down with him. Like she's like says to him, like, who going to check me, boo? And she's going to like kick this guy's ass. It's like a famous scene. What did you think was going to happen when this woman walked outside to be like, no, I'm going to go get her?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was having to piece a lot of things together. I didn't know the backstory. I don't know the friendships. I started to realize as the episode went on that these two were close friends that had an argument. This is what you're talking, and I did watch this like a week and a half ago.
Yeah, because I choose iconic scenes, not that you need to be an expert. It's like an iconic scene in this genre that that Sheree would like walk outside and eventually pull on someone's
wig.
But Sheree runs outside and then decides to grab Kim's hair. Like, what do you think about that? And what do you think about that in 2023?
Well, I mean, regardless of the year, I mean, I don't know if I'm unusual in that I'm projecting myself into these situations and thinking I honestly can't even imagine getting in people's faces like that, and certainly not pulling hair. And I guess I'm curious, sitting here with you, and did you do that on the show? Like, were you fighting?
No, I was
pulling hair.
No, never. I mean, I think it could be a career destroyer, but I just, that's not even my nature anyway. I mean, you definitely, there are people who have thrown glasses at each other in this series and thrown wine.
It was baffling to me. And then when I was watching, I was like, oh, right. This is, I guess, why I think that the show has fighting. It has a lot of fighting, right?
Yeah, they do. They do have a lot of drama, but I would say, like, you wouldn't see this on Beverly Hills. Orange County would definitely get into a fight like this. It wouldn't happen on Beverly Hills. There's, like, a certain level of control and measure that happens. It's, like, different franchises have different, like, personas.
No.
So the persona of Orange County is more where they might get into like a hair pulling fight.
They need to have like a full on lesbian version of this.
Yes,
just like across the board, just like all lesbian housewives.
That's amazing. That's amazing because they've talked about having lesbians on, but they haven't talked about all lesbian housewives. All right, that's a good idea. That's a great line. And it's
all right. Well, we're gonna produce it together. Me,
okay,
and Bethany. Don't you run off with this? And
I won't run off with it. I'm writing it down.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. LifeLock monitors and alerts you to identity threats you may miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become the victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve identity theft issues on your behalf. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Why wait for your tax refund in vain? Help protect your information immediately with LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 25% your first year. That's 25% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Identity theft protection starts here.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
So now, now we see Kim. Kim is someone who's always in controversy. She recently, there was a controversy that she was losing her house. She had an affair with a married man, but he was never able to be on the show. She called him Big Papa. Presumably at this time, that's where the money comes from. She's the one getting Vila sculpt, like sucking her ass and not working out. But for the purposes of like authenticity as a viewer, you know, I remember being so shocking back then, her just getting her legs and ass sucked on television back then, which would totally happen now everywhere. But there was something like in the honesty of it all that I found very entertaining, like of her not her being like, I'm not going to work out. I'm just going to get my ass sucked and I don't know how much it costs. I give them the credit card, you know, because I don't even know that that's entirely true. This audience wants these people to be very rich, even if it's not entirely true.
Yeah. How rich are we talking? You know, because when in that moment of the episode when she's like, I don't know how much it is, I just give him my credit card. I thought, okay, that's clearly an example of if you have to ask the price of something, you can't afford it. And this is somebody who is letting us know, obviously, she's got a lot of cash. And of course, you've got to have some cash to be on the show, right?
Well, but, you have to look like you have cash to be on the show. But one of the biggest takedowns of all of these shows is women saying, like the usually the one who dresses the best and shows off the most, that woman's house is in foreclosure, or that woman, they filed bankruptcy, or somebody comes out on the show saying that they owe them money, or the person's husband gets arrested because they've been defrauding people, or the woman herself goes to jail because she's been defrauding people, or someone pays hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash and furniture, and 2 years or 4 years or 5 years later, she and her husband both go to jail for tax evasion.
So how much does somebody like this woman have that's having her ass sucked?
Anywhere from nothing to maybe a couple million bucks, but not a lot. And at that point, we think it was the guy she was... At that point, based on what they got paid at that point, and based on the fact that her house was just up for foreclosure and that it got canceled, the guy that's married is letting her charge in his credit card.
This was, you're saying it was an unusual time that somebody is being that open and honest about, like, yeah, I'm just gonna go to the doctor rather than go to the gym.
Well, we all were so much younger then, right? So when we all were cast back then, we were in our 30s. And so not everybody was talking about Botox and whatever that ass-sucking thing was. I don't know that everybody was doing that on television. It just was very different. Like now people are doing everything. People were doing things then, but it just, I remember that scene. And there was just something about the entitlement of, I'm not going to work out. I'm just going to get my ass sucked on television, probably because this guy's giving it to me for free in exchange for promoting it. Like, it just, there's something about it that was raw about it. It was just like I said, it was, the show was just a little more messy back then, which I like.
Yeah.
So she has like 10,000 bracelets on. She's sitting there. And now Candy was a newer housewife. Now Candy was in what helped write, I think, the song Scrubs. Remember that song? I Don't Want No Scrubs. And she was like in a girl band called Escape. So she's actually a talented musician and singer. And she's now on the show, which was different than just women who were just obscure. This was like the first kind of individual with their own previous brush with fame. So you're trying to find notable people in Atlanta. So that was that was Candy when she's with, you know, at the carnival. So we go to this party. There are these hang on people, like not in a bad way for him. Like there are the friends of the people that become their own characters.
Yeah.
And so he apparently is given his own scene to have this big birthday party because it's an event that everybody gets to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So my favorite line of his was, this is a birthday party and a production. I want high drama all night long.
Yeah.
So now let's get back to 2023 and grabbing Candy's breasts.
I was a little surprised by that. That is clearly not something that's going to, I mean, obviously things still happen now, but it doesn't feel like something that would be that blatant and
from anyone. And especially with a camera, your camera's there. It might be in the back of an office.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say, is showcased in that way.
But I'm wondering what your perspective, you walk in as you and someone grabs your breasts, which is, this is the episode of like, keep your fucking hands to yourself.
I mean, me personally, I don't even have breasts because of, I had cancer. But if somebody grabbed me like that,
that might make you feel even more self-conscious, by the way.
Well, no, not me. I mean, I did a comedy special for HBO with my shirt off after I had a double mastectomy. So I'm not that sensitive about it.
Got it.
But as far as somebody touching me, if I had breasts still, that wouldn't fly. No. And I don't think it's appropriate. It's just across the board. I think there has to be more civilized behavior and respect of other people's boundaries.
Do you think that Bravo should have stepped in that regard?
Yeah, I think that's completely in line.
It's a violation in the workplace, effectively.
Yeah, and there's so much more that needs to be done across the board in this world. But you see, not just this show, but so many things. There have been breakthroughs of change. And
definitely, and many of them are scripted. This is real people. So that's mm-hmm. like really showing you the world versus like writers in a room. You know what I mean?
You could tell Candy was so uncomfortable. It was clearly, that's how it seemed to me.
It was clear that she's uncomfortable. Now, think about this. She's a new housewife. She's a new girl in school. So she wants this gig, I'm sure. And she's been on it for years and been very successful. She wants the gig, which is very, you know, you can make an analogy to like a job, right? She wants this job.
Yeah.
And like in work and like in Me Too, sometimes the game is moving too quickly. Like you don't even know, you later think about something being inappropriate. We hear a lot of these stories. Someone was taken advantage of, you know, but like the game is moving quickly in the moment. We don't all react in the moment the way that we do on, you know, the Monday morning quarterback. Like when a person has taken advantage of you or said something inappropriate at work or tried something on you. And like later people come with these stories because I'm sure they've digested it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's easy for people to say, why did you respond this way? Why didn't you walk out of the room? Why didn't you hang up the phone? And honestly, most people aren't thinking that they're walking into a scenario where somebody's going to grab their boobs and you're caught off guard. And yeah, especially if the layer that's added to the situation is that this is a job or a new job. That really puts you in a situation where I think it's easy to freeze or maybe not respond in a way that you would have if you had been given some information beforehand.
And we also didn't know what was right and wrong then. We just like allowed for different things. Meaning I, as a viewer back then, I remember the weave pull, and that's what the episode is named, Unbelievable. It's not called Unbetittable. And the truth is, I don't even remember the boob thing. I remember the weave thing, meaning Bravo didn't even highlight it. It wasn't in the description, and no one really had a big problem with it because we kind of allowed for shit that we didn't allow for that we allowed for shit that we don't allow for now. We stopped so down.
How is your feeling all these years later as somebody that was on a show that had these elements?
Well, that's a great question because, so I went on the show, it was called Manhattan Moms, the show that I joined. It was supposed to be about a bunch of moms and getting their kids into private school. And they were looking for the last mom, and I wasn't a mom, and I wasn't even in a successful relationship, and I wasn't rich. I lived in a studio apartment furnished by IKEA. And I said no to it for the first month. I didn't even understand what it was because it wasn't what it was. It wasn't anything. Mm-hmm. And it was really great back then in the sense that it was more about like conflict of the mind, and it was New York, and there was a lot of like more of like mental arguing. There was never anything physical, number one. And yeah. Number two, definitely inappropriate things happened. But it was always something from the very beginning that I was a little embarrassed by, to be honest. And I only did it for 3 seasons until I left. And most people who were just broke don't leave something when they start to make money. Mm-hmm. And I left for multiple seasons and tried to really disassociate, which happened. And then I went back for a lot of money and with a different perspective and to connect to this audience the audience is a great, smart audience. They're very well educated, very funny, smart. So for whatever reason, I took a while to think about it. And I went back and I went back for a lot of money, the highest paid that time. Mm-hmm. But I always was still a little embarrassed. Like I wanted to kind of be there, but like not be there, you know? And always tried to stay elevated. And there was a moment where I spoke to a very powerful agent that I know and wanted to leave. And he said, there's going to be a point where people are going to be like, what the hell is she still doing there? Mm-hmm. Like, why? There's only such a point that you can be, you know, seem a little different than everybody else. And why is she still being there? So when I left and I told people why, it had turned into something different. It evolved into something different. Because the more crazy scenes like that happen, the more the next group of people coming in feel the need to do something crazier, throw a prosthetic leg across the floor. So the more preconceived notions they have about what people look like or what people have, they want to have more and they want to put on more makeup and be more. Mm. So it became something very different than what it started out as. Mm. And I honestly said why I left it. I didn't want to be there anymore and I didn't love what it represented. And my daughter was embarrassed by it. And that's, I try to be light on that.
Yeah.
Because it's a version of shitting on where you came from and what made you brought you up. So then when I did this show, it was a whole thing all over the media. Why would I do this? The show that I trashed, etc. And I said, because I'm not trashing anybody and I'm allowed to reflect on my experience like we are right now, give some perspective. And also, it's not a trash show. And the game was moving fast when we were on a boat and there were no life vests for all these housewives and the boat was like hit by a giant wave. I was fucking loud. Like, what the fuck? Yeah. We almost died on the goddamn boat in Colombia and had no one check the life vests, you know? Like, it was hard. The game, it was a little bit like the medieval times back then.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I wasn't aware that, I guess that you had kind of removed yourself and that maybe reflected on that time differently.
I removed myself and it was like the Eagle Health Freezes Over tour. And then I went back because I still was going. I was still going back to what I thought that it was earlier. Mm-hmm. And I went back to a whole different show. That was when everybody had hair and makeup teams and when everything seemed more contrived. And, you know, there were too many different cities. So people were watching other shows and coming on and be like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to be that. And I'm going to buy a Ferrari and show it off. And I'm going to, you know, it became really competitive. So people had to do more.
Are you friendly with people from the show?
Like I remember certain people fondly and I'll text and keep a nice distance, but like congratulations or a like post. But most of the people you're kind of put together with, and it's not really the place to like to nurture new friendships, and it's a great place to kill interpersonal relationships that you came in with and family relationships. It's pretty toxic and it's very entertaining, and the people make a lot of money and they'll show a charity scene out of 50 and then it makes everybody feel like it's all better, but it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's entertaining, but it is real people. Yeah. There are a lot of dynamics though about people like we're talking about that come through. And that's why I like this show, because you end up talking about female dynamics, or why does somebody feel the need to brag, or why would you go on TV when you have something to hide, and skeletons and a thousand different things. So there are interesting topics that come from that.
Yeah, I guess if I had more of that information, now that you're saying that about skeletons in the closet and bragging, even finding out that you're saying some people are completely broke. And I was assuming watching this that the show is about multimillionaire, that everybody is just swimming in cash.
Everybody now, and when I was on, like, they would never cast me now in a studio apartment, but everybody now needs to seem like they're wealthy or aspirational. But there will be nothing that a producer will like more than finding out that that's not true, but they look like they are. There's nothing better than, you know, and this is where it gets crazy, a person who is not drinking falling off the wagon. Like, it's, that's why it's weird to be a producer on these types of shows too, because you have to ride the line between when do you like cross over to the ick factor? When is it like, stop the cameras, this is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And usually they don't stop the cameras no matter how crazy it is. I was on a trip with one scene where they did actually stop the cameras because someone looked like they were having a breakdown. So, you know, stuff like that happens.
I know you don't know me, but just right off the bat, how do you think I would do as a cast member on a Housewives show?
Well, if you acted like, if you signed up for it and then said things like, I can't imagine ever getting into a fight like that, you would survive the first season, but then the shiny car smell would be off. And like, you have to, in other words, there was one person who went on a couple of dates with someone really famous. And this person had like a title, and they kind of acted like they were always above it, but they were there.
Yeah.
So like, if you're there, you're a mud wrestler.
Yeah.
Some version of a mud wrestler.
Yeah.
You know? So if you said that wouldn't fly with the breast touching, so I'd like to know how that wouldn't fly. Like, you're using your inside voice, whatever that is. That's what you're using in that experience. So you're joining. You need to use your outside voice, whatever that means.
That's interesting. Yeah.
You know, like I don't say to somebody at drop off and pick up, like, why did you choose that shirt today? But if they were on the Housewives and so was I would say, what was the motivation behind that wardrobe choice? Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. And I feel like if I was on that show, I would get that question every day. What was behind? what were you thinking? Why are you wearing the same outfit every day on this show?
Yeah, that wouldn't work well at all. It might. It's actually a new character, but that wouldn't work. That might not work.
Be on the Lesbian Housewives.
Or you could be the token lesbians. Ask your partner.
Yeah.
Go invent a cocktail. Get really rich about it.
No, somebody approached her about doing something with
you'd be good as the partner that like people like, because you come in and you roll your eyes and you say a few things and you don't have to get really dirty. Uh-huh. And then they like you, you know, that becomes a favorite. Less is more. You could be that. She could be the one who gets in the fucking mud.
She wouldn't.
Okay. Well, we'll forget that.
Yeah, we'd be a terrible match for it.
Okay. All right. Well, we won't put that in the list for that. All right. So Nene is talking to Lisa. She's the one she goes power walking with. Now, Lisa was a housewife that I believe was let go. And I'm actually watching her and thinking she was let go, and Sheree, the one who got out to pull the hair, was let go at some point in this process. And I'm actually thinking, Sheree, I never understood why she got let go, because I loved her, because she is a tough broad and she's entertaining to me in that. But Lisa's like a little spitfire, and she was also let go, and she's better than a lot of new housewives now. So I was thinking about why they were let go as housewives. Like, they were a little too fast and loose about letting people go back then. Because people way worse will last way longer than now. And I would have to ask Andy about that.
And how long is way longer? Like, what's a long run for these?
There's a woman who just left the show, and it's a gray area whether she left or got fired, but we believe that it doesn't matter what we believe. She left the show, and we don't believe that she wanted to. So her name is Lisa Rinna, and she was on probably like 12 years. There's one who's been on for 14 years since the beginning. That's like the Susan Lucci of Housewives. Like, that's a run. Like, you've made a decision. Like, you've made a life choice to be on the house, a career housewife.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. The average lifespan of a housewife, I would say the average lifespan of a housewife is 3 years, 2 to 3 years. And wow. I've always maintained, if you get fired from the only job you have to do is be an entertaining shit show, that's all you have to do every day. Doesn't matter what you, like, you just have to be an entertaining shit show. And if you can't do that, that's pretty grim. That's pretty fucking grim. So Lisa, I believe, was let go. And she's like a little spitfire and is like ready to throw down, which I thought was interesting. She and Nene are talking about Sheree, who's moving into her house. Sheree was married to a professional football player who had a contract. And mm-hmm. she said she wanted a seven-figure settlement. She was really firm about that. And Susie Orman was on my podcast saying, like, why would that be her goal? A seven-figure, like, that's her whole goal. Like, why wouldn't it be that she's actually going to get the money? Like, the way that she said it, it was like, Sheree said it like it was a status symbol versus, like, Susie Orman talking about that she's actually going to get something that she wants something that she can actually attain. Mm-hmm. Because just getting a settlement doesn't mean you're actually going to get it. And, like, that it just seemed like a status symbol. It was interesting the way she talked about financial planning and the housewives, which is an oxymoron. So now Sheree is moving into this new place. She has to get out of her other one because they weren't paying. And now she's in a new place on her own and the girls come over. And that's why Nene and Lisa are gossiping beforehand about Sheree and about the divorce. And they roll in. So Sheree has a friend with the short hair. And I thought this was really interesting too, because you look at things differently now. Nene walks up to the girl and says, you need to eat a sandwich. This thin girl that's friends with Sheree. Do you remember that?
Yep.
So the girl says, Soon I'll be your size. So the pendulum swings, Nene's offended, this other girl becomes the villain, and the girl was a little extra, but this girl becomes the villain, and I'm thinking, why is it okay to say to somebody, you need to eat a sandwich, which indicates you're painfully thin, you're anorexic, whatever that means, like that means something not positive, and why was that okay? And the moment that the show, too, the pendulum swings to the Nene comment about her being overweight, and it's like, it's sort of like the weave pull versus the tit grab. I think they're equally as offensive. And I think Nene came out of the gate.
I agree. I as somebody that has had health issues, I've had people make comments when I was like deathly ill, similar, eat a sandwich. And I'm like, well, it was all at the same time. I had invasive cancer. I had an intestinal disease. I had a lot going on, and people would write online that I needed to eat a sandwich. You know, I feel like that's that thing that people love to say.
And you need to put that in your act because it's so stupid. I've tweeted back, okay, I just ate a sandwich. Now what are we going to do?
Exactly.
Should we all get on the scale together? What do we do next? I just ate a fucking sandwich. Now what happens? I'm waiting for the movie to end. Like, what's going to happen?
I'm all set. I had my sandwich.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's equally as offensive, and you can't, you know, you can't track everyone down online and be like, but I'm ill. I'm deathly ill. And you don't know what's going on with people, and you don't know, maybe they're eating a lot of sandwiches and they're
like whatever their thing is. Like, it's just like, but it wasn't balanced in that. Okay. She said that you made a little quip. Okay. I'm gonna let it go. The girl came back and said, and she didn't say, you're a pig, you're fat. She said, I'll keep eating and then soon I'll be your size. Like, yeah. I think it was like mano a mano, like eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. I didn't think either was more offensive.
No.
You agree. Interesting.
I you know, it comes from a personal place of having that said to me previously, where I'm just like, it can be equally
true. And the burden is on you, because I have this autoimmune issue, and I was in Aspen recently and I was very severely dehydrated, and I couldn't absorb hydration whatsoever. And you would think I would like lose weight. I gained like 10 pounds in a week, and it got up to like 8 pounds in a week because something, I think my body was an emergency trying to hold on to any liquid or something was going on. And people were like, what the fuck happened to your face? Like, you know, and then the burden is on you to now explain your most personal medical journey with people because some troll. And that, but that's something about the sign of the times. It's another one of these things like it's OK to pull the hair. It's not OK, but it's OK to grab the boob, not OK to pull the hair. And it's OK to get upset if someone calls you overweight, but it's not okay if someone calls you underweight. Like these these constructs that happen in society that like back then that was okay.
Yeah, I still feel like it's okay for people to make that comment if you're if they think you're too thin. It's still not something that's off limits.
I agree.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.com.
Oh, and then the girl says to, I wonder why that girl wasn't cast as a housewife. That I wonder. I was always wondering, like, that girl, because she then said to the other, to Lisa, you got to do something with that, with your hair.
Mm-hmm.
Like she said, you have to do something with that. Like she was like talking about something about if you can just get in a pool and wash and wear. So yeah, this show is, you know, who's better at insults in a way.
Yeah, and a lot of them are good.
Like who can land an insult? You know, who can land it? And you know, here's the thing. Let me ask you this because, you know, that line from the Woody Allen movie: if it bends, it's funny. If it breaks, it's not. And so. I have an ex that used to always say, humor wins. Humor is its own excuse. So you get to get away with a lot more on these shows if it's funny, if it lands.
Yeah, I mean, it's across the board. And it is true. A lot of times with, you know, there's a lot of topics that come up in the comedy world where people will say, oh, you can't talk about this. You can't joke about this. And I get asked that in interviews, is there a line that people shouldn't and can't cross? in comedy and joking around. And my feeling is it has a lot to do with intention. I think most things have a lot to do with intention. And one of my albums that actually ended up being the number one selling album, comedy album in the world in 2013.
Wow.
Was about what?
That's a big statement.
Yeah, well, and it's true. It was the number one album.
You're like, well, it's a lie, but it's cool. No, that's amazing.
No, it's true, but it was, you know, an album where I talked about having cancer. And I always use that as an example of people always say there are some things that are not funny, and one of them is cancer. And then I say, well, my album was the number one selling album that year. And I think that it goes back to what my point was, is it's intention. And I wasn't on stage saying, ha ha, cancer is funny, and I'm laughing at people that have cancer that are struggling or in pain. It's how it goes back to, it's all in the delivery. It's what your intention is. It's usually an angle that you're not thinking about that's going to be the funny way of presenting a topic. And people, when they think cancer isn't funny or death isn't funny or anything that's triggering is not funny. Well, the way you are thinking that somebody is going to deliver that is going to be the least funny, offensive way. If there's a way into a topic that's interesting, surprising, with the right intention, then I do think you can surprise people with how you make a joke about a topic.
Did you think that anybody on this show or anything about it was funny?
It's not my sensibility. It was the only kind of laughing I think that I had was stunned. I was watching it going, what is happening? So it wasn't like, oh, she really got her with that, and that's so funny. And I know that's a lot of how people watch the show and are amused and are laughing about it. It's just not my sensibility.
Right. Did you think it was like women taking women down? Because, by the way, it's gotten so much crazier now. It's another level what it is now. It's steroids now.
I cannot.
No, because now it's people that are incarcerated and people who are being, you know, their kids are being bullied online and blaming other housewives for being responsible.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, you were amazing. I loved meeting you, and for you to be so just open and honest and like do this, what was probably like, why am I doing this ridiculous show? So I appreciate that too.
No, I was very interested. I'm always... there's so many typical scenarios and podcasts and people that I can find myself face to face with. And when this came through, I was like, well, why on earth would they want me on here? And then my wife was like, you got to do it. That is going to be so fun. And not that Stephanie, she doesn't follow it, but she's more familiar with pop
peripherally.
Yeah. And her sister follows it. So I was like, yeah, I got to do it.
Are you glad you did it?
I'm very glad I did it. And it's it gives me more understanding and perspective about the show.
Like the genre of what people are doing.
Yeah, because I have friends that I think have podcasts and talk about these shows and stuff. And I'm like,
right.
I don't even understand what's happening.
Oh, now you can talk. Now when you get a drink, you can think of me. And now when you talk to them, you can think of me. So you'll be thinking of me a lot. Yeah.
Well,
it is good for people to understand that when someone's like, why the hell would you do that? And it's like, is it money? Is it this reason?
Thank you for having me. I hope I wasn't a letdown. If anybody's interested, I have a couple of podcasts.
Oh, what are they?
I have an advice podcast called Don't Ask Tig, where I have a different celebrity every week. You'll have to come join me.
Okay.
And we give advice to people. And,
okay.
And then I have another one called Tig and Cheryl True Story. And it's me and Cheryl Hines from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
It is? Oh, she was just on here. She was just on Just Be, my other podcast. Cheryl Hines was just on. I liked her a lot. Cool.
Yeah,
tell her I
awesome.
Said hello.
Awesome.
Well, fabulous. Well, I want to come see you perform sometime. I've loved stand-up my whole life. My whole life.
Please do. I'm I'm always on tour, so I have a website, but in LA.
I'll look it up. But I love, literally, since I was a kid and like way too young to be watching stand-up, but also used to go watch Alan Havey and Jon Stewart at the Comedy Cellar downstairs before, like, you know, and I happen to know a lot of comedians. Like, I just happened to, I did stand up for 5 minutes one night at New York Comedy Club, mm-hmm. and no one was allowed to have phones, and it was literally the first night that they opened, and little did I consider that people would have to be 6 feet apart and wearing masks in a comedy club. So that was the first time I ever did it, which isn't like, that's not that much of a good
setup. During the
for
pandemic
comedy.
You started?
I did it one time for 5 minutes. I just said to myself, I wanted to try something I had always wanted to try. And I called everyone from Ellen to Chris Rock to Kathy Griffin. Like, I just got a piece of advice from everyone. That was like my sort of approach, and Kevin Nealon, and learned a lot along the way. Had just wrote a bunch of things down that I've liked and thought was funny. I and just like Chris Rock saying, the beginning and the end is important. The middle is just a flow, and then it's a very intimate thing. Don't bring an entourage. And then someone else saying, bring an entourage. Kathy Griffin thinking, bring a lot of people for the energy. And then Kathy or someone saying, take the mic stand and put it away from you immediately. And then Bridget Everett being like, you need the mic stand. It's a pro, like hearing all this stuff and then having to decide for myself. But the one thing that, I think it was Kevin Nealon that gave the instruction and then Kim Whitley that gave me the answer. But Kevin Nealon was like, let me realize that people have different styles. Mm-hmm. And not meaning like Stephen Wright or something so overt, but meaning like Kevin said, I tell a whole story. Like, it's kind of like a storytelling where other people are like individual back-to-back jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I realized that my quote-unquote style was ranting, like things that aggravate me. Kim Whitley was like the things that aggravate you. That was like my style. And so I did 5 minutes, and even with the masks on and people being apart, people laughed. Like, I didn't feel naked up there or anything. Like, I landed the jokes. I could have been slower.
That's awesome.
I did it. And I actually, I love it. Like, I think it's great. I mean, it is really hard. And the reason I think it's so hard, and I said, I'm glad I kept you on, because I said to Paul, we were watching Sebastian Maniscalco and like a bunch of other people one weekend. And I said, it feels like The Housewives. Like, I said to Paul, when you do a major scene on The Housewives, not like one of these scenes where there are two cameras, but there are four camera guys, right? It's like a big scene, like someone's christening or something. Like, the train leaves the station and the cameras are on and like you're there. And if you say something, you're in your head knowing you said it, but like the cameras are still on. You have to like keep going. So you can't. And there are some great housewives that will say something terrible that they should never have said. They can get out of their head right away and just like keep rolling and not worry about the fact in 6 months from now, they're getting canceled when that's on air. And, you know, to not be in your head. I said to Paul, it's like, that's what stand-up looks like. They're up there. It started. The people are right there. And they can't even go to the bathroom, like, even though the cameras might come with you, but just take a minute. Like, they're on the goddamn ride. And they definitely fucked something up and said something wrong. And they're living in it, but still in the future and in the present at the same time. And that seems so hard for, like, an hour and a half special. Because the train has left the station.
Yeah. 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 It's definitely... When you say it's hard, or, you know, I feel like when you're doing what you want or you're supposed to be doing, it's not that hard, but it's, I would say in the beginning stages, it's hard when you're really learning the, the world of comedy and performing.
Well, were you going to say like the mechanics of it too? Because there are mechanics, which most people don't really realize.
Absolutely. I mean, people don't realize that. And I've seen, when I first started, there was a girl that really in her heart and soul, she came and watched the comedy show that I did every week in my first year of comedy. And she truly believed that every comedian was just getting up on stage and just talking, had no plan. They didn't think anything before they got on stage. They just got on stage and talked. And she signed up to go up on stage, and she did, and just crumbled. And the crowd destroyed her, and she was crying. And I went out to eat with her at a diner afterwards. And she was like, how do you do that? Oh my God. Oh my God. I thought you were just talking. And I was like, no, there's so much that I was going up on stage, you know, 6 or 7 nights a week and working at it all the time, the same material.
Yeah. It's funny because I think me going up and doing well was beginner's luck in a way. And the reason I say that, so I've done, I've done speaking engagements around the country, and it always ends up being like a stand-up act. Like people are laughing at all this different stuff, but it still has a structure. It still has some base that I can always go back to, meaning I'm promoting a book and there's 10 rules to it, or I've come in because we're talking about charity. I've got like bullet points to go to. I've got a toolkit. Yeah. And what I realized that night, and also it was a week that I said I was doing it. Of course, every person would be great at it. Everybody said, my accountant, oh, I know, I'd be great at that. Everybody said, I've always wanted to do it. Okay, so go do it. Like, it annoyed me because I felt like I was going to get up and do it no matter what. Yeah. And I wasn't particularly nervous because the worst could happen is, I guess, that you're not funny, which is pretty bad. But the reason I felt safe when I did do it, even if it wasn't so funny, which people really did laugh, they weren't like crying, rolling in the aisles, but like it was a success. It was a, if I graded myself on a test, it was an 85. But I felt safe because it was organized. Like I felt like I had a nest, even if it wasn't that funny, it was talking in an organized manner. Like, so that was why I didn't feel like it could be a total bomb, because I knew where I was going. And even if that wasn't the funniest joke, I wouldn't feel lost. So the organization was what surprised me the most about stand-up comedy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a complicated beast, and it's easy for some, and you know, there are others that have been doing it for decades and they still are rattling in their boots backstage. And
wow.
Yeah,
I would love it. That's like a career path. I wouldn't like traveling like you do and going to all these cities. I wouldn't enjoy that. And I won't sort of taint the process by like dabbling, because I realize how hard you work and how hard people work. So it's like something you have to fully commit to, which is why I've only done it that one time to break the seal and see what it would feel like.
Yeah.
But when I got responses from people like Chris Rock and Ellen and Kathy, like it was nothing, and Kevin Nealon, I had so much respect for the craft that like people were so in detail about the advice. Like Chris Rock gave me the longest piece of advice, and I don't know him well. I just was so moved by him writing a couple of paragraphs in a text to give me like really solid takeaway advice. So I thought the whole experience was like, I honored the craft that you do more. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my comedy story.
Well, cool. Well, congrats to you.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for coming, and I hope I cross paths with you again soon.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff, and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. you cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.